Hi everyone, this is my disclaimer. The views of the guest that you hear in this interview may not represent those of the station or the host. Hi everyone, this is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio, where our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. Folks, I have a very special guest today who wrote a phenomenal, and I mean a phenomenal, powerful, heart-touching book. And I'm by no means a book connoisseur, critic. I don't have the credentials. It's just my opinion. And all I can say is holidays are coming up. This is a great book to buy as a gift. And I'm going to tell you about my phenomenal guest. My guest today is Ned Backus. He is a community college educator and advocate. He is a writer, author, musician, a speaker, songwriter, and just to tell you how wonderful of a writer he is, Ned Backus' collection of short stories, City of Brotherly Love, was awarded the 2013 Independent Publisher Award Gold Medal for Literary Fiction. Also, Ned Backus wrote Open Admissions, What Teaching at Community College Taught Me About Learning. He was a professor for over 40 or nearly 40 years at Community College of Philadelphia, where he won multiple teaching awards. Ned Backus, welcome to Chatting with Betsy.
Thank you. I am delighted to be here with you, Betsy. I really am honored to be part of your program.
Oh, you're welcome. And of course, my brain always goes ahead of my mouth. I forgot to say the name of your book, but we're going to talk about Mortal Things. And I had to start with the book cover, Ned, because it's so, to me, appropriate, Mortal Things, and you have this the cover of angels. Did you had that on purpose? Is this a place in Philadelphia or a random picture?
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate it because I was able to figure into the designing of the cover insofar as I suggested that a possible image might be those three angels that people who drive through Philadelphia are pretty familiar with because they are part of the public statuary that exists along the banks of the Schuylkill River in Philadelphia as it winds its way near Center City and approaches the famous Museum of Art there and the Rocky Steps and all that stuff that people are familiar with. And local people tend to be very familiar with these angel statues because they're so different, and they always have the way they're situated is when you see them, you always see the sky behind them, and it's, you know, often just a beautiful blue sky behind those angels. When we were meeting to discuss, you know, what we should use for design, that was the first suggestion I had, was maybe take a look at those sculptures. And the designer got a hold of a very good photograph. Tim Ogline is his name, and he is brilliant. And he worked with that photograph and came up with a wonderful design. I love it. I hope he wins awards for his work on this book because it certainly makes it, it's a very eye-catching, appealing image. I'm very, very happy about that. So I had the idea, and it kind of resonated for me because there are three main characters in the story and three angels. And that sort of, and there, it's a very iconic Philadelphia shot. It's a very Philadelphia book. And everything just seemed to be right. And in the hands of someone as talented as this designer, it worked out beautifully.
Yes, and I love how it's has the clouds. And in my perception, I look at it, and there's the angels, which to me represent a mortal things, and the clouds, like it's almost like mysterious. You see blue, but you see the white clouds. I just think it's very cool, and I really love the cover. Sometimes I'm really into book covers, and I'm very much love your book cover. I think it's absolutely fantastic and very appropriate for your book. I'm going to ask you what I ask all the authors that come on is, what inspired you to write such a powerful, intense book? And I mean that in a good way. That's a positive way. I mean, I laughed. I cried. And it even made me come to terms with my pain of my own loss. Such a profound book.
Well, you really put your finger on one aspect of the novel that I think is unavoidable, and that's the fact that it is very much about loss and pain and what we do with it. And of course, nothing is more human, more part of the human experience than loss. As almost as soon as we're born, we start losing things we care about, losing people we care about, of course. That's where it is the most powerful kind of loss, when we lose people. But right away, we find out that nothing really lasts, or at least it seems like nothing really lasts. And that's something to think about, what if anything is immortal, and so on. But the story, the novel came from a story. It originally was a short story that I began way back in 1986, and that was when I was in an MFA writing program, and these two characters just sort of showed up on my computer screen, and that was my first computer. I hadn't had a computer before, and I got a computer so I could do editing, because I as soon as I started the program, I knew, well, geez, this is going to be organized. I'm going to have to be responsible and do lots of follow-up work very quickly, so it'll be great to edit with. And much to my surprise, within a couple weeks of owning my first computer, I almost couldn't write anything not on the computer, unless I was on the computer. So it quickly changed my life. And in that first semester of working on stories, generating stories, this particular one came to mind. And it basically formed the first two chapters of what is the novel now. And a lot is set up right there, and then everything sort of flows from that. So it was almost like I had unwittingly written the triggering incident for what would become a novel. But I did not know that it was going to be a novel at the time. I kept working on this story, and I was in the program for 2 years, at the conclusion of which I found that the experience had really opened two doors for me that changed my life. One was the door of writing. It made me feel like I really should be doing this. It wasn't just something that I was curious about, interested in, liked. It felt like this was my calling. This was work that I had to do. I just had to do for myself. Not to pay the bills, not to feed my family. I had a way to do that. But because my soul wouldn't let me rest if I didn't do the work of writing. So I began working on this story. The other door it opened was teaching, because this degree gave me the credential that enabled me to move from my position at the time, which had been at a college, at a community college, as a counselor. And I was happy to be a counselor, but I was looking for something different. I wanted a different role to play after doing that for a number of years. And I was able to transfer into the classroom. And I loved that. And that I loved it more than I expected I would love it. And I ended up writing a book about it, about leaving that work, because it had become so important in my life that I felt my own sake. I had to write about it and just gather my thoughts about it. And that turned into the book called Open Admissions, What Teaching at Community College Taught Me About Learning. And so as a teacher, I had both a way of earning a living and doing a day's work that meant a lot to me and only grew in that regard over the years. But I also had the summers off, and that was when I wrote. I never could write during the academic year. I just became too involved in my work. It was too demanding. And that was fine. That I loved it. But I also loved being able to have a couple of months in the summer when I could immerse myself in my writing, trying to write fiction. And that's what I did. So over the course of many summers, I worked on this and other manuscripts, and ended up with a book of stories, as you mentioned, that came out in 2012 and won that award in 2013. And that meant a great deal to me. This story was originally part of that collection, but I pulled it out because I was, at that point, it had become a novel, and I was working on that. And so I kept working on Mortal Things, and it finally came out this year. So, I mean, it's almost, 38 years? I have to stop and do the numbers, but it's decades of work that I took in order to get this done. This is not a process I recommend to anyone else. It's just, it was the way my life was. And I'm not complaining, because I was able to be with my family, to raise our family, to do meaningful work that mattered to me at my alma mater, at the Community College of Philadelphia, working largely with first-generation students, folks who, you know, 100 years ago never would have been allowed to set foot in a college, basically. And that's a mission that still resonates with me. It's still very important. But
I could tell.
My other
you must have been. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I apologize for cutting you off.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just had to say, I know, don't ask me how I know, I just know, you made an excellent teacher. I could see that. Go ahead.
Well,
I just had to say that.
I felt very privileged to be involved in the lives of people who were trying to do something basically to save themselves, to give themselves a life. And these were not privileged individuals. They're people who, you know, would have had a very different path had they not discovered higher education. And that work was just incredibly important to me. And I'm very glad I was able to do it. And then,
well, I'm glad you wrote this book too.
Well, that once I retired, I was able to throw myself more fully into the writing. And even now, I've been retired now for 10 years, it's still taken me a long time. The writing a book is one thing, getting it published is a whole other deal. And that's a challenge. And there's a certain amount of luck involved. And of course, I mean, there are just tons of talented writers out there. So it's a very, it's a difficult path to take. But I feel very blessed, very fortunate that the folks at Tree of Life were interested in this book and have done such a wonderful job with it.
Yes, and you did a wonderful job in writing it. And I have to ask you this, Ned, because it always fascinates me when I read a book. And I always want to ask an author this, and I feel very comfortable asking you this. I'd like to know, how do you get the characters, the plot, the characters, where you want to have the stories in Philadelphia, because you live there. One of the people, Sarah Goins, is she works at the college, and that's where she meets Mike Flanagan. But just how you get the dialogue, what each character is going to say, it just boggles my mind, really, how an author puts all this together.
Well,
it amazes
me. Thank you. I can only respond about how I do it. I can't speak for how other authors do it. I felt like I was blessed by the appearance of these people on my computer screen. They showed up. Mike and Sarah showed up as a couple, a kind of star-crossed couple that really intrigued me. They interested me. And I tried to get to know them, to understand who they were, and then let myself see, okay, what are they going to do? They have, you give them a what-if situation, and then they have to deal with it. And if you've figured out who these people are, and you understand their backstory, their personal history, because we all have backstory, and it matters. It's not the only thing that matters, but it matters. And I tried to let myself know, what made them who they are today? What factored into that? What kinds of things, what living situations, what relationships, what events influenced how they think, how they see the world, how they understand the world to operate, how they see themselves in it? And then probably the best thing that ever happened to the story was the arrival of the third character, who had no connection with either Mike or Sarah, but through luck runs into Mike in an unusual situation, and Mike ends up helping him. And they start a friendship, a connection. And that's the character of Dominic, who is well into his 70s. He's a barber, but he's mostly retired, has health issues. And he and Mike establish a sort of odd little connection. When Mike shares this information with his on-again, off-again girlfriend, Sarah, she's very intrigued and puzzled, because there are a lot of things that Mike won't talk about with her. And already this person, this older guy that Mike's met, seems to know stuff about him. He seems to have gotten a connection established with Mike that he's almost envious of. And one thing leads to the other. I don't want to spoil anything, but they all become aware of each other. They learn, they all become connected. And as their relationships, their one-on-one relationship to each other grows, their lives become increasingly complicated and intertwined. And they have an effect on each other. And I became very curious as to what, given the circumstances, what's going to happen to these people? How are they going to go? How are they going to handle these challenges that come up. And as when you're a fiction writer, you find yourself thinking in terms of, always thinking in terms of what if questions. And of course, that means trouble, problems, because nobody reads about simple, uncomplicated, happy stories. They're not, you know, that's not really much of a story. There's always got to be conflict and trouble, challenges. Even, you know, any kind of story has, something's at risk, something is at stake, and whether it's, you know, the team winning the football game, or the army winning the battle, or surviving a hurricane, or whatever it is, something's at stake. And I was intrigued trying to follow what's at stake for all three of these characters, and then letting it roll out. It was a long, exciting ride, and I am relieved and gratified that it ended up as a book.
I am too. I think that you could even, I'll give you a job, Ned. I think that you could even, and I don't know if you ever thought of this, spin off, like write a book about each character by themselves even. Mm-hmm. I mean, this could go into so many different directions if you wanted it to, but even the city of Philadelphia, to me, is a character in the book.
Oh, that's interesting to hear you say that, because the setting it really is important in that it's, I see this as a very Philadelphia story. But having said that, I never wanted to write something that was so about one place that's all it was. I think when authors really dive deeply into any particular living situation, they really are honest and looking deeply into that, they're going to find, they're not only going to get it right, they're not only going to get that particular niche in the world right, I think they're more likely to tap into what's universal, so that when readers read a book like that, I'm thinking of books like James Joyce's collection of stories called Dubliners, Howard Frank Mosher's novels about the people up in the on the Vermont Canada border, people who write novels about areas that we think of the author and we think of a place. They're enriching in terms of getting the reader to really learn about the region, the area, but they're so deep that they make us understand how we think, how we live, because when you really understand any one cultural grouping, you understand all of them. You understand humans. And that's what I was hoping for in this novel, that that it would be a Philadelphia story and have certain appeal in that way, but really use Philadelphia to get at what we all experience, whether we live in the United States or in another country or in another time. You know, it shouldn't matter. But I wrote about what I grew up in, and in particular, the neighborhood in which I grew up in, because I found it such an unusual and interesting place compared with other places that I encountered going through life. So I had a fictional terrain that I could mine, that I could go into and find characters, because I had so many experiences. I met so many people and always noticed these things. You know, I was always curious about people, and I felt blessed to live in such an interesting, curious place.
Yes, I live in New Jersey, and Well, I haven't been to Philadelphia since I was in grade school, so that tells you how long ago. But I remember the Franklin Institute and seeing the Liberty Bell. But just the way you describe in such detail, it's the detail of your book that I think is a very high point. This is my humble opinion, that you actually, and me as a reader, thought that I was there. I could visualize the neighborhoods that you were describing as if I was there. This is what I love about reading, because you could go anywhere in the world and be somewhere by reading a book, especially
right.
when they go into, you know, the detail. And I just think it's an incredible story of how these three people connected, what they had in common. I don't want to give any spoilers away. I want the audience to get the book, what they have in common. And one of the things that you had talked about before we started to record, and I see this so many times, I had in my own life, I see it in support groups, is unjustified guilt. Did you know that you were writing about that, Ned, or was that just something that just happened?
I think it's just there. It's something we do as humans. We're prone to that. It's misplacing responsibility or guilt in an effort to try to deal with something. And I think it comes from a good place. It comes, for most people, it comes from a desire to be honest, to be fair, to be kind, to be loving, whatever, you know, all those things. We sometimes get it wrong, and we blame ourselves for things that we really are not responsible for. I think that's a pretty common human move. And there certainly is some of that going on in the novel. That's part of it, yeah.
Yes, and I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I will say this. The character Mike, to me, and I observed this right away, had unjustified guilt about what happened in his life. I won't say what it is because I want people to read the book. And people think, Ned, I know I've done it myself. I would, I should have, I could have. If I was there, that wouldn't have happened. If I would have made a left or a right turn, if I didn't go out that night, if I didn't do this, if I didn't do that, and it can drive you nuts. It could actually destroy someone. And I just love how you...
It could be very counterproductive.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly. Go ahead.
I don't want to say it's appealing. It's tempting. It's something because it almost makes you feel like I have to. It must be my fault. I mean, no, it because what happened is so horrible. I should have done something, even if you really couldn't have. People talk about survivor guilt, and I think that's related. I think that's sort of part of this. Is, you know, it didn't happen to me. I didn't. You know, the disease didn't kill me, or the bullets didn't find me, or whatever it is. And I mean, this is a documented thing. People around the world experience this if they've survived something, others didn't. And and life is a matter of loss. And when we lose things, what we're anchored to, I think, has a lot to do with how we respond to it, where we find meaning in life, what we rely on to explain things in life. And the three characters in the novel have very different ways of anchoring themselves. They're, you know, and that plays out, and the reader gets to go on the ride and see how these three individuals fare with the way they look at things. I would say one of the things people ask me what the book is about. One of the things I say is, well, I think it's really a lot about the importance of family but not
yes.
just the family we're given, the family we're born into, also the families we make. When we have relationships that with non-family members that essentially become de facto family members, those are powerful experiences that people have. And there's certainly a lot of that going on in this novel. I think humans are wired to reach out for family, to find that, to make it if they don't have it. And that
yes.
becomes a factor in our lives too, a motivating factor, and also something that is a result of other things going on in our lives. But that drive to family is important, to have other people that are more than just friends.
Yes, and have shared similar circumstances. I know that being in caregiving groups, it's like, especially my group that I have, we're a family. We support each other, and I feel like when people go through a similar circumstance, that it builds a bond, a very strong bond. It's almost like going through a war together, and
yeah.
you have that bond that I think is just builds a sisterhood or brotherhood among yourselves from shared experiences that no one else would understand because they didn't go through. And I think that these characters in your book, they have a understanding of each other, even though they had different set of circumstances around mm-hmm. loss. And, of course,
yeah.
their faith plays mm-hmm. a part, especially with Dominic.
Right. They're in very different places with regard to the faith, and that's part of the anchoring aspect of life. That faith can provide an anchor for people or not. It doesn't always, but it can for some people. And that's one of the contrasts in the novel, is looking at what it is that sustains these people and how do they react to it? What does it do for them, and how do they deal with it?
Yes, and there's a lot of, you have the three main characters, you have the city of Philadelphia, and then to me, this might sound crazy to you, Ned, but to me, the barbershop was also mm-hmm. a character in the book. Played
well,
a big part.
I think it is. I wanted it to be, and I wanted the guys in the barbershop to be kind of like a Greek chorus, if you will. they sort of help tell the story. They help move the story along and capture something that is going on within the three characters. They all have their time in the barbershop, getting to know that's where Dominic works, and I work is he's only allowed to work with a few clients, a few customers. He's mostly supposed to just be there because his benefactor is a slightly younger barber who recognizes the loss that Dominic has gone through and wants him to feel like he still has a job, but not to feel pushed by it. So he's there, and Dominic's there, and there are two guys from the neighborhood, elderly fellows, who spend their days there. That's what they do. And they're very different characters, but they've become friends. One's black, one's white, and they spend their days sitting across the waiting room from each other at opposite ends, kibitzing all day and insulting each other in a kind of loving way. And they do that barbershop does become kind of like a character. Yeah. It's
yeah.
It's something that people have been telling me they find a notable part of the novel.
Yes, yes. You know, all neighborhoods change over the years, and in your book, Mortal Things, it does talk about Philadelphia changing, and there's so much more to this book I want to tell the audience, but I don't want to give anything away because I want you all to read this book. Ned Backus gave me permission. I want to read a couple of lines from this book that had such a profound, heart-touching effect on me personally. And I personally, this is so phenomenal. And if you've suffered a loss, I'm sure you're going to find this very powerful. The character Sarah, this is at the end of the book, Ned wrote it, but she was thinking it, or somebody else was. Pain didn't live with you every minute of every day. It visited. You became familiar with the visitor's habits. Pain didn't leave forever, but you could bid goodbye to the fake hope that it would. Boy, that was so profound to me, Ned. I actually wept. I wept when I read that, and I said, you know what? That confirmed my own personal experience that, you know, people think, oh, you know, pain leaves you. Well, in my experience, you'll always feel the pain of your loss, no matter who it was. But it does change over time. And how you wrote this in the book just confirmed it for me. And I have to thank you for writing that in your book, because that is really, I can't even tell you how impressed I was by those words, how that just touched me and affected me personally. I thought it was just fantastic. So I'm going to thank you for writing this book.
I'm speechless. I'm honored that you said that. That's just very moving to me. I really appreciate that, and I hope people don't think I'm being funny or weird with this, but I have to thank the character Sarah, because I was trying to get her thoughts, and I worked hard at getting what I thought she would be thinking at that time. And that's how it came out. That's how she put it. And I'm very touched that it meant so much to you.
Yes. Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, I wrote it separate so I could keep referring back to it. And, you know, I tell people in my support group that talk about, you know, grieving, that, you know, we will always feel the pain of the loss. It doesn't go away, and that's okay. And, you know, it changes over time. Maybe for some people it doesn't, but it's always there underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I think as a culture, especially in the States, we need to change our attitudes about grieving and how we handle loss. But it's a whole different show. But I think your book really, to me, points that out also, about handling loss and grief. And folks, I don't want you to think, I'm going to tell the audience, I don't want you to think this is a depressing book. It's not. It's not at all. It's a very heart-touching book. And I highly recommend the book Mortal Things. Where can people purchase this wonderful book, Ned?
Well, they can either go to their friendly local independent bookstore and order it, or they can get it themselves through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, through any of those type places. If you want to go on my website, nedbackus.com, there's information there about how to order the books. But, I mean, a lot of people like to just do the Amazon thing, and you know, that's certainly an easy way to do it.
Well, thank you. I want to tell the audience, I highly recommend you going on NedBackus.com, and the information will be in the blog, because Ned is, you're super talented. You're a musician, songwriter. I have to ask you, what kind of music is that? Is that kind of country music that you sing?
No, it's the name of the band that I've been in for well over 30 years is Sacred Cowboys, but that was always a joke name, meaning that we sort of played with sacred cows. So we were kind of a somewhat disrespectful, satiric kind of group. But the music we play tends to be along the lines of roots rock and roll, kind of Louisiana, New Orleans, rhythm and blues kind of music. So it's oriented towards getting people out of their seats and onto their feet dancing. We like to get our idea of a good time is getting people dancing and having fun. And
I like that.
That's what we do.
I like that. I did see a clip of your music, but now that my mind went blank, I couldn't remember exactly. I thought it was along the line of country, but more like I would think like the Delta country, like a rhythm and blues.
Well,
type.
Louisiana rhythm and blues.
Yeah,
a little bit of a French accent, you know, sort of Cajun kind of accent.
I like that. I just want to tell the folks that your mom was from Canada and spoke French, but she wanted you to know English.
Yeah. I was raised by a single mom. My parents were divorced when I was very, very little. And my mother had emigrated to the United States and wanted to make sure that I could survive. So she wouldn't speak French to me at home. She insisted on speaking English all the time. And that was important to her. She was determined that I would be able to survive. And that's how she saw it. And it means that my French skills have never been as good as they should be when I go back to Quebec and visit my family, my relatives, but I did all right with the English and ended up teaching it, much to my surprise, and probably to the surprise of some of my teachers.
On that basis, I want to thank you for coming on Chatting with Betsy. You are a pleasure to talk to, and thank you for writing Mortal Things, a novel. Folks, I really want to urge you to buy this phenomenal book. I think it's great. Holiday time is here. And go on NedBackus.com and look at what Ned is doing, and you will be very pleasantly surprised. Ned Backus is awesome. And it was an honor and a privilege to talk to you today. Thank you.
The pleasure is mine. I really, I'm very moved by your story, by your, you know, the way you've responded, the fact that you do what you do, the support group with your program. It really is, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. And I hope our trails cross again.
Oh, thank you so much. That was very nice of you to say. Well, whenever I get done reading your book, Open to Missions, I'd love to have you on again.
Okay.
Sometime next year.
We can make that happen.
Yes. I mean, there's so much more to discuss with your book that I didn't, but there's just so much detail. And that's what, you know what, in my own opinion, like I said, I'm not a book critic by any means. What makes your book stand out to me from other books that I've read? It's the detail. A lot of deep a detail that you really are relating to the characters. You feel like you're there in the story. You feel like you're part of the story. And I just thought it was a fantastic read for me. It is a, you know, long book, folks, but I'll tell you what, it goes by fast. I stayed up 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't put the book down.
Wow.
I was like, oh, let me read the next chapter. Oh, I can't put it down. Let me read the next chapter. But it was worth it. And I really am glad that I read your book, and I wish you much success
on your book. I got to say one thing. As much as you say that you really aren't much of a book reviewer, it's hard to really believe that, because you are so detailed and thoughtful in your response to the book. So you may have to start acting as if you really are a serious book reviewer, because that's what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Then I'm like, you know, who am I to give my opinion? I'm not a quote formal book reviewer critic, but I just when I feel really strongly and passionate about something, it just shows. I mean, that's just how I am, and I'm very passionate about your book, and I do believe that it is a phenomenal, powerful, intense book, and I highly recommend the audience to purchase the book. I know they will not be sorry. I think it would be very enlightening and insightful to a lot of readers who have gone through a loss, and I know it really touched me. So I thank you again, Navakis, for coming on. And folks, I just want to tell you, please subscribe to Chatting with Betsy. It is for free on, where am I, iHeart, Spreaker, Spotify, and Amazon Music. You can subscribe to Chatting with Betsy for free there. And I have phenomenal guests. You don't want to miss them. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who's CEO of Passion World Talk Radio, who makes this all possible, and Jeannie White, who's the station manager, who writes the blog and produces the show. Information about the book and Ned Backus will be in the blog, so please read the blog. And I want to thank everyone for listening. Please share this show to help other people, and that's what my mission and vision is about. And I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, although this probably won't be posted till next week. But I wish everyone a happy holiday season. And if they can't be happy, I hope you have a peaceful one. And as I always say at the end of my show, in a world where you could be anything, so please be kind and shine your light bright, because if everybody was kind and shined their light bright, it would be a much brighter, happier, peaceful world. And yes, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I still do believe that. And that's what I have to say today, folks. Thank you again for listening. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio. Bye-bye now.